Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. CU makes cut for location consideration. Chain CEO hopes to build 30 stores next year. Chick-fil-A in 2019, Costco in 2020, Trader Joe's in 2021? It's early in the process, but Champaign-Urbana has made its way onto the trendy grocery chain's list of about 200 areas under consideration for expansion. Trader Joe's CEO Don Bain told the News Gazette on Wednesday. Of those 200, Bain said the plan is to build stores in about 30. The lengthy list was compiled Tuesday during Trader Joe's annual expansion-themed meeting, during which the company's retail officials proposed which cities ought to be considered. Our executive vice president from the middle of the country said she thought Champaign-Urbana would be good to consider, Bain said. Champaign-Urbana was not on the list last year. It is on the list this year. The challenge now is about trying to find the best 30 out of 200. The next step, Bain said, involves giving a network of brokers a hunting license to scout for possible locations in cities on the list. That's followed by a deeper dive, including analysis of the three primary factors that Trader Joe's considers when choosing where to set up shop: population density, median household income, and education. Champaign-Urbana probably comes out really high in education, Bain said. There's no hard deadline for narrowing the list to 30, he said. Known for its low prices, two-buck chuck wine, healthy options, reduced guilt potato chips, and quirky culture, Hawaiian shirt-wearing employees, the fast-growing Southern California-based chain has 503 locations nationwide. Those included 17 Illinois stores, all on Chicagoland. Depending on your starting point, the closest Trader Joe's to CU is either in Indianapolis, home to two stores, Orland Park, or Naperville. For CU to land the number two rated business on 2019's American Customer Satisfaction Index, on the heels of adding numbers one, Chick-fil-A, and six, Costco, it won't be based on petition signatures, Reddit comments, or any other customer campaigns like those that have popped up in the recent years in Champaign-Urbana. We did that once, Bain said, and it turned out to be not a great location for us. Post-game shooting 2 years later, still no answers. Incident changed way schools handled extracurricular activities. It's been more than 2 years since three young women were injured by gunfire after the last boys' basketball game in Champaign between the Danville High School Vikings and the Champaign Central Maroons. Despite many hours of investigation by both Champaign and Danville police detectives, no arrests have been made. We've identified people of interest, however, no charges have been filed, said Champaign Police Detective Sergeant Dave Griffith, echoing a familiar refrain in shooting investigations. The Vikings and Maroons were back at it Wednesday night at Combs Gym. There was a noticeable police presence, not an unusual sight since the 2017 incident, for a game that tipped off earlier than usual. Despite scores of people rushing out of Combs Gym when the shots rang out about 9:20 p.m. on Friday, December 8, 2017, police have been unable to find anyone willing or able to tell them enough to effect an arrest. The victims were all females, a 15-year-old from Danville, a 17-year-old from Champaign, and an 18-year-old Parkland College student. All were treated and released. In addition to the shots that hit them, bullets also hit the window of the first-floor classroom and penetrated a parked car. Shocking in its boldness, the violence prompted the cancellation or postponement of other games between the two schools, the shifting of some Unit 4 night sports events to Saturday mornings, the presence of floodlights to illuminate the dark tree-filled neighborhood around the decades-old school, and of course, more police. Assistant Principal Brian Yacko, who was publicly lauded for his heroism in running toward the shots and possibly preventing more injuries by keeping people inside the building, is still at the school. Central prevailed in what was described as a contentious game that night. The sides met again without incident on February 8, 2019 in Danville, with the Vikings winning 68-65. Report is news to REITs. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reed said she won't be launching her own investigation into an email reference about an alleged sex assault in Champaign made by a politically connected lobbyist 2 years ago, but will absolutely respond if a victim makes a complaint. There is no reference to who, what, where, or when, the veteran Democratic prosecutor said. It's just an email saying, be nice to this guy because he helped cover up a rape in Champaign. Certainly, if a person comes forward to local law enforcement to report a crime, we will absolutely be willing and interested in addressing it. At this point, we have absolutely no information about who, what, where, or when anything happened. She added the day after Chicago's WBEZ-FM reported on a 2012 email exchange between lobbyist Michael McLean and staffers for former Governor Pat Quinn that cited an alleged cover-up of the rape in Champaign without offering any detail. Reed said she is not familiar with McLean. I am not enmeshed in Springfield politics. As for calls that she launched an investigation, Reed said that is the role of police. In Champaign County, for financial reasons, we don't even have a grand jury. I rely on local law enforcement for the investigative role, she said. Make up hazardous waste collection on tap. The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency has agreed to return to Champaign County to collect the household hazardous waste items from hundreds of people who signed up for a collection event this past October, but couldn't get through the backed-up line. For now, the collection is open only to about 600 people who have been sent letters about the makeup date. They all reserved an appointment slot at the October 26th collection, but couldn't get in, according to Nicole Millage, Environmental Sustainability Specialist for the City of Champaign. Those households have until January 31st to sign up for a time for the makeup event set for April 4th. Millage said there may be some spots open for others to sign up starting in February, but no reservations are being taken from others at this time. Local governments that organized the collection with the IEPA know who was and wasn't able to get in at the last event because those who reserved a spot received cards in the mail that they were asked to turn in at the collection, Millage said. Only about half of those who signed up to participate in the October collection were able to get through a line that was backed up through the day well north of Market Street, North Market Street from the collection spot at Marketplace Mall's parking lot. Steps will be taken to assure the problems that plagued the October event won't happen again at the upcoming one in April, Millage said. The IEPA has assured local governments that there will be additional drop-off lines and sufficient personnel and loading capacity at the next event, she said. As was the case with the October event, this collection will be for household waste items such as oil-based paints, herbicides, pesticides, cleaning products, used motor oil, aerosol paints, and other items that shouldn't be tossed in the trash. Champaign County Board, myriad marijuana topics up for discussion. While a long line remained outside a Champaign dispensary a week after legalized weed sales began, county officials plan to make another attempt at regulating marijuana businesses that might want to set up shop in unincorporated areas. A county board committee is poised to make up a revised zoning change intended to strike a balance between allowing marijuana businesses to operate in rural areas and concerns about potential problems that they could cause. The amendment proposed by County Zoning Administrator John Hall to be discussed Thursday night would authorize marijuana businesses only within 1.5 miles of home rule municipalities with populations of 20,000 or more, specifically Champaign and Urbana, with restrictions largely matching those being imposed by the two cities. For example, both cities prohibit consumption of marijuana on the premises of local dispensaries, and the county would likewise forbid that in the fringe area around Champaign-Urbana. The amendment would also impose stricter requirements for cultivation centers and craft growers looking to operate near residential areas. The county board would need to approve special use permits for those businesses within 300 feet on an existing home or lot. That matches a requirement in Urbana, Hall said, but if the county amendment is approved, it would also apply to the area outside Champaign. Also included in the amendment would be restrictions on night lighting, for example, at cultivation centers growing marijuana in greenhouses. Hall has included an alternative to consider what would authorize cannabis transporters, cultivation centers, and craft growers anywhere in the Ag 1 zoning district, with a transporter permitted only as a home occupation. However, there would be a 1.5 mile buffer required around villages and home rule municipalities that don't allow cannabis sales and around such residential areas as Seymour and Penfield. This creates many more opportunities at the risk of allowing these uses to convert more best prime farmland, Hall said in a memo to the County Board Environment and Land Use Committee. Meanwhile, marijuana customers continued to line up in below-freezing temperatures Wednesday outside Sunnyside Dispensary in Champaign. There wasn't a line outside the Urbana Dispensary, New Med Urbana, as of late Wednesday morning. Sunnyside closed for one day on Monday to give a break to its exhausted employees, who have been working long hours since New Year's Day, but has since resumed normal business hours, according to Jason Erks, spokesman for Sunnyside's owner, Cresco Labs. The supply of marijuana products is holding out there, but sales are being rationed to stretch the supply as far as possible, Erkus said. Cresco doesn't anticipate having to close for a day again, he said. I think we're in a good spot now, he said. Art Theater extension okayed for appraisal. A federal judge is giving the trustee assigned to the bankruptcy of the Art Film Foundation an extension to appraise the downtown theater's assets. At a hearing Wednesday, Judge Mary Gorman granted more time to trustee Kristen Wilson, who has hired an appraiser. The owner of the property at 126 West Church Street, David Kraft, is seeking more than $9,900 in unpaid rent. He says the theater owes him plus 15% of rent for the 6 years left of the lease. In a motion, Kraft lawyer Joseph Chamley said that would amount to about $60,000. Another hearing is scheduled for February if the parties are unable to reach an agreement. I'm in close communication with Mr. Chamley and with counsel for the debtors, and we're working to resolve this as quickly as we can, Wilson said at Wednesday's hearing. The attorney for the theater, Christina Manuel, did not comment. The Art Theater closed abruptly in late October and filed for bankruptcy on November 5th. A November 19th filing showed that the foundation reported assets estimated at $40,444 and liabilities estimated at $41,575. In addition, the closing of the theater, Art Film Foundation Interim Executive Director Rihanna Bativa said the film industry is changing and we will face systematic challenges that show no signs of abating. A meeting of creditors is also scheduled for next week. New DCFS report contains a catalog of horrors. This is Jim Dye's column. Illinois Child Protection Agency issued a 384-page report this week that revealed in excruciating detail what already was obvious. State child protection workers fail too often and at too high a cost. We, Illinois, must do better. We need to do more to support families early on before they get into deep trouble. But when families are broken, we need to act decisively to protect children, wrote Merrill Paniak, the acting inspector general at the Department of Children and Family Services. That's hardly a surprising observation. Neither is it surprising that the inspector general didn't really have much to propose in terms of doing better than the usual prescriptions. Better training of caseworkers, smarter oversight by supervisors, and smaller caseload. DCFS is asked to do an impossible job, fix people who have many, many severe and chronic problems, what the agency calls contributing factors in the family crisis. The primary factors we have observed this year, not surprisingly, are substance abuse, domestic violence, behavioral health, paramour involvement, poverty, chronic neglect, excessive physical discipline, and prior involvement with DCFS, Paniak stated in her report. But that's not the entirety of the problem. Giving an impossible job to a dysfunctional bureaucratic agency further aggravates already pathetic circumstances. No wonder DCFS directors come and go like clockwork. That's why what DCFS tries to do, and mostly achieves one way or another, is to keep potential disasters to a containable level. It's when it fails to avert disaster and the bodies start piling up that the public becomes aware of the stakes of failure. Think Andrew A.J. Freund, the 5-year-old suburban Chicago boy who was murdered by his parents last year after DCFS unfathomably overlooked injuries that justified removing the boy from the hellhole that passed for his home. He's not the first to die under circumstances that would have been avoided, could have been avoided. He won't be the last. He is, unfortunately, just the latest. The Freund scandal, as these kinds of cases always do, unleashed a firestorm of concern and anger about how DCFS does its job. In addition to the parents facing murder charges, two DCFS employees have been targeted for dismissal. But over time, the outrage dissipates. Then something like what happened to AJ happens again. The DCFS study revealed that there were 123 child deaths over the past year involving children who had prior contact with state child protection workers. That's a hideous number, the highest since 139 child deaths in 2005. As bad as it sounds, the numbers are not quite as bad as they could be. The causes of death crossed the board. There were 24 homicides, cases like that of poor AJ. There were 37 listed as accidental, 34 by natural causes, and 7 from suicide. Another 21 were reported as undetermined. Suicide? Undetermined? What horror stories do these words hide under a shroud of vagueness? Of the 24 homicides, 9 died from blunt trauma due to a child abuse, 11 from gunshot wounds, 1 from exposure to the cold, environmental neglect, and 3 from carbon monoxide intoxication. Their deaths came at the hands of mothers, fathers, other relatives, boyfriends, and girlfriends. One child died as a consequence of contact with a police officer, while 9 perpetrators are unknown, and as a consequence, their case is unsolved. Of the 37 accidental deaths, 12 were from asphyxia, suffocation, sleep-related, and another 5 came from blunt trauma injuries. Other accidental deaths include 2 from drug overdoses, 1 from hanging and 1 from a gunshot wound. Of the 24 homicide cases, 10 were from Cook County, but area counties also were represented. Champaign, 1, McLean, 2, Macon, 1, and Peoria, 2. Of the 123 deaths, 49 were from Cook County, but 6, the second highest number statewide, were from Champaign County. In addition to the one homicide, 1 was undetermined, 2 were accidental, and 2 were natural. Cold as they are, those are the numbers that reflect the harshness of life, the meanness of desperate family members, and the state's inability to do as much as it would like about either. Decatur man indicted on federal charges alleges sex with Champaign teen. A federal grand jury returned an indictment Tuesday against a Decatur man who allegedly had sex with a 14-year-old girl in Champaign. Daniel Betty, 27, had already been arrested in November on state charges of aggravated criminal sexual abuse and grooming, and again in December after a federal complaint was filed against him by Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson. On Tuesday, the grand jury returned an indictment charging Betty with sexual exploitation and enticement of a minor and receiving child pornography in September and October 2019. He allegedly met the girl through an app called Spot a Friend, which bills itself as a swiping app for teens, but not a dating app, according to the affidavit filed in support of the criminal complaint. The girl described the app as designed to help teenagers meet other teenagers for the purposes of having sex. Betty allegedly told her he was 17, according to the affidavit, and soon after they started messaging in September, they allegedly started sending nudes to each other, according to messages obtained with a warrant to Spot a Friend and images recovered from the girl's home. On October 6th, he allegedly picked up the girl near Champaign's Westside Park, according to the affidavit, and on the way there, he allegedly told her he was 19. "Is she going to report me to the cops?" Betty allegedly wrote to the girl, referring to her friend who had started messaging him, telling me, "I'm going to go to jail." The girl said her friend wouldn't report him and that they still allegedly met up, according to the affidavit, and she told investigators they had sex in the back of his car. Champaign police got involved October 10th when the girl's mother reported that her daughter had been sexually assaulted, according to the affidavit, and October 29th the girl was interviewed at the Champaign Child Advocacy Center. Police were able to identify Betty from photos on the girl's phone. Her description of him, subpoenas to Spot a Friend and AT&T, and vehicle records from the Illinois Secretary of State, according to the affidavit. The girl also identified him in a photo lineup and a search warrant for Betty's home in Decatur was authorized November 22nd. Betty initially denied using the app recently, according to the affidavit, but a Champaign detective, Caitlin Fisher, confronted Betty with additional evidence. He became more somber and quiet in his responses, at times shaking, and finally said he was fairly certain his life was ruined. If convicted, Betty faces anywhere from 5 years to life in prison, depending on which charges he's found guilty of. Now that it's formally a federal case, state charges will be dropped, Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reed said. Centennial High School, boy 15 gets probation for role in brawl. A 15-year-old Champaign boy who took part in an October 1st brawl at Centennial High School has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. The teen pleaded guilty in November to mob action for participating, along with two others, in hitting and kicking a fellow student while he was on the ground. A teacher who tried to break it up was elbowed in the head but not seriously hurt. A charge of aggravated battery against the youth was dismissed in return for his guilty plea to mob action. The youth apologized to Judge Heidi Ladd on Tuesday and to his mother for what he had put her through. Assistant State's Attorney Alex Boyd and Defense Attorney Ed Pirano agreed that with support of both his parents, the boy is likely to succeed in a community-based sentence. He had already served 13 days in detention. Ladd reminded the youth of the absolutely unacceptable nature of such violent conduct, especially in school. He was also ordered to perform 50 hours of public service, follow his parents' rules, cooperate with counseling, and have no contact with the victim or other students who joined in the fight. Probation violation. 16-year-old sentenced to juvenile prison. A 16-year-old who violated his probation by having a shotgun has been resentenced to juvenile prison. Judge Heidi Ladd resentenced the Champaign teen, whom police had said was being investigated for other shootings in Champaign in November and early December. However, the teen was never charged in those incidents. The teen was on probation for an aggravated battery that happened in late December 2018. The shotgun with a shortened barrel was found in a court-authorized search of his Garden Hills home on December 3rd by Champaign police. In addition to the previous aggravated battery, he had another adjudication for battery, State's Attorney Julia Reitz said. In court a month ago, Reitz said police had multiple contacts with the team going back 6 years for armed robbery, trespass, theft, possession of burglary tools, and resisting arrest. Police said the teen was not a suspect in the December 2nd shooting of Dakari Roberts, 10, who was shot in his own home at Williamsburg Drive in Northwest Champaign. No arrests have been made in that shooting, which remains under investigation. Roberts was released from the hospital in late December, according to Facebook posts by his mother. 2 pounds of pot nets man probation. A Champaign man, who admitted he had cannabis intended for sale in his home last spring, has been sentenced to 18 months of probation. Vincent Gloder, 43, who lives in an address in the 4100 block of Manor Court, pleaded guilty Monday before Judge Roger Weber to a Class 2 felony charge of possession with intent to deliver between 500 and 2,000 grams of cannabis. The drugs were found in a court-ordered search of the home on April 30th, conducted by the Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force, after a police source bought cannabis from Gloder. Besides just under 2 pounds of cannabis, police found cannabis edibles, food saver bags, a sealer, scales, and about $5,300 in cash in the house. Gloder was also ordered to get a substance abuse evaluation and pay about $10,500 in fines, fees, and costs. Assistant State's Attorney Brooke Hinman said he had prior misdemeanor convictions for theft and driving under the influence. The case of co-defendant Sandra Lambert, 29, has been continued to February 11th. Champaign Sprint Store, man gets 10 years in 2016 robbery. A Kankakee man who participated in the holdup of a Champaign phone store a little more than 3 years ago has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. Andre Williams, 30, has been in federal custody since October 2018 after his arrest in the July 28, 2016 armed robbery of the Sprint store, 2706 North Prospect Avenue, Champaign. Williams pleaded guilty in May and was sentenced Tuesday by Senior U.S. District Judge Michael Milne. He also admitted his role in the August 27, 2016 armed robbery of another Sprint store in Coldwater, Michigan. Williams admitted that he recruited Thomas James and Andre Nunn to robbed the champagne store. During the holdup, two customers, a mother and a son, and two male employees were held at gunpoint, and their wrists and ankles were bound with zip ties. Williams admitted that he gave instructions and explained how to use the zip ties. He received most of the proceeds of the robbery, approximately $10,000, and gave the others involved less than $2,000. The 52 cell phones stolen from the store were transferred to Williams' vehicle and sold to another person in the Chicago area. Others involved in the Champagne armed robbery who have been previously convicted and sentenced are James, who got 19 years, Nunn, 8 years, 4 months, getaway car driver Randy Williams, 15 years, and Williams' cousins Javonte Williams, 7 years. In addition to the prison sentence, Williams was ordered to pay restitution of $32,021 to the Champagne Sprint store and $42,129 to the Coldwater, Michigan store. The case was prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorneys Ellie Pearson and Ryan Finlan. Paxton Pub shuts doors. A popular restaurant and bar in downtown Paxton has shut its doors and been put up for sale after 2+ years in business. Paxton resident Ben Grice said he made the difficult decision to close Harvest Ale House to free up his schedule so he can spend more time with his family. The 41-year-old opened the business in the 105-year-old building at 102 South Market Street, across the street from another restaurant he owns. The Humble Hog, in August 2017, following an extensive renovation. I've done nothing but go, 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 and haven't taken a minute to spend with family, Grice said, so now I am. Grice said his focus will now be solely on the Humble Hog, which will remain open at 125 South Market Street, Grice said. The Humble Hog will honor Harvest Ale House gift certificates. Grice stressed that Harvest Ale House was a successful business and the decision to close it had nothing to do with the lack of sales. We always drew a crowd. We had a great team, Grice said. It's a new year and I'm taking a hard look at how I run the businesses. And I'd like to simplify our entire model and just focus on one branch. Grice said he has already been in contact with a few prospective buyers, and he hopes a new owner can be secured soon. Grice said the buyer would continue to operate the restaurant and bar as the Harvest Ale House or under an entirely new concept. It'll take the right person for sure, Grice said. We're entertaining several conversations at once right now, so we'll see who steps forward. Most of Harvest Ale House's 22 part-time employees were cross-trained to work at the Humble Hog, Grice said, and all will be given opportunities to remain on staff at the popular barbecue restaurant that has been a Paxton mainstay since November 2014. Ex-instructor files lawsuit. A former Parkland College faculty member is suing the school, claiming officials reduced her course load to the point where she was let go. Cassandra Wolsick filed the 10-page suit this week in Urbana federal court. According to the complaint, Wolsick began working in Parkland in 2009 and most recently was a part-time agriculture instructor. She alleges that starting in the summer of 2012, her bosses began to scale back her teaching credit hours for no good reason. She also claims her pay was reduced and courses she was qualified to teach were given to male instructors. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. Please stay tuned for Part 2.